Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
So in our studio right now is Lisa Koop. She is the Associate Director of Legal Services at the National Immigrant Justice Center. The National Immigrant Justice Center is housed in Chicago. You're the Associate Director of Legal Services there. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Sure. Thanks, John. It's my pleasure.
What do you all do?
Well, we provide legal services to non-citizens, many of whom are in removal proceedings, many of whom are seeking asylum.
How are you funded?
Through a broad range of private donations and foundation support.
Not tax supported?
No.
It would seem to be almost ironic if it was, because you're representing people who are not here legally, is that right?
Well, some of our clients have green cards. Some of them are citizens who have family members that need assistance. So we would argue that it absolutely is something that the government should be supporting, but largely it does not.
But also, if somebody crosses the border but they are seeking asylum, then I think that's a distinction that we should note, right? Asylum is something that we do afford citizens of other countries. There's a process, but that's different than maybe somebody who is just fleeing to the United States because they want to live here. Am I right about that?
That's right. So our immigration laws specifically contemplate offering protection to people who are fleeing to the United States because they've been harmed or they fear harm in the future.
We have been hearing about the children separated from their parents or whatever adult they're traveling with at the border. We have a zero tolerance policy, or we did for a short while. The kids were separated. Some of them were sent to centers in Texas. They were staying in big box stores and defunct places that were repurposed with cages. Some of them were also sent to Chicago, right?
That's right. There were several dozen who were sent to facilities in the Chicago area.
Those children specifically?
Right. So those were children who were separated from their parents at the border, sometimes because the parents entered other than through ports of entry, and sometimes parents that presented themselves at the bridge had their children taken from them and placed into this network of shelters.
What is the difference between a port of entry and what is a port of
entry? So a port of entry is a bit of a legal term of art, but it's a place that's designated for individuals to present themselves for entry in the United States. So O'Hare Airport, for example, would be a port of entry.
Okay, but there along the Texas-California mm-hmm. border, what would one be?
Right, so there are pedestrian bridges and of course, motor vehicle crossings where
any road entry. Where there's a checkpoint? Any road where there's a checkpoint, would that be considered a port of entry?
Well, along the border between, if you're presenting yourself on the Mexico side and there's a specifically designated location where we have Customs and Border Protection officials who examine individuals who are seeking to enter the United States, that
so
would be a port
of entry.
So it's
not all of the roads, but some places. And I wonder if the migrant community knows about this policy, knows what those places are. Do they know how to legally enter this country and seek asylum?
Not always, sometimes, but many times you have people who have given no real forethought to their journey other than the fact that they need to get out of the place where they've been living and they need to get to a place where they can be safe with their children.
But you get the impression that maybe some of them are crossing illegally. When they get caught, they say, I'm seeking immigrant status or
refugee status.
And that's sort of their get out of jail card. They're essentially abusing the system or the phrase.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think many of our clients who have legitimate concerns and are afraid are coming to the United States and then immediately upon entry looking for a Border Patrol agent to say, hey, look, I've been persecuted in my home country and I need help.
Well, these kids in Chicago, what is their status? Are they legitimate contenders for refugee status or are they just people that were trying to sneak through?
No, many of them are asylum seekers. And so at present, they are children who are in deportation proceedings. So they're in the process of being deported unless they can successfully defend against that deportation.
Well, Tuesday was the deadline to reunite these families, right? Even if they're still being detained, they were supposed to be together, correct?
That's right. That's right. The government's missed the deadline to reunify the children under the age of 5 who were separated from their parents at the border.
Right. And that was my understanding, that it was the kids 5 and under.
That's right.
What about the rest of them?
So the older kids are supposed to be reunified by the 26th. And so
of
there are a
month.
Couple more months, but we're gearing up for another mad scramble and chaotic sequence of time where the government's trying to connect people with their parents and kind of put back together the families that they separated.
I heard that one judge said that he appreciates the effort that the federal government is going through to hurry up and get it done by Tuesday. They missed the deadline, but they weren't critical of them for lack of effort. What do you make of the effort the government did to keep these families together?
I mean, I think it's too little, too late. I mean, we appreciate the efforts that they're making now, but even now, we still have children who, you know, we've spent all morning calling deportation officers trying to get information about what's happening to a 3-year-old child who's in one of our facilities, whose mother is detained elsewhere in the country.
What
and
are
we
the
can't
ages?
Get
what,
an answer.
What are the ages of the kids you have here?
So the children, well, so for the under fives, they're all the really little kids. So we have some 3 and 2 and 1-year-olds. But for the other class, the 5 and up, those would be kids that range in age from 5 to 17.
Where are they being kept in Chicago?
So they're in the Chicagoland area. They're at shelters in and around Chicago and the suburbs.
You can't tell me where?
Right. Those are undisclosed locations.
Could I go with you to tour these places?
We would have to get permission from the Office of Refugee Resettlement in order to do that.
Okay. I would like to, but maybe that's complicated. Maybe they're not so inclined to let me do that.
And again, that would be something for the federal government to decide. We have had lawmakers and other stakeholders come and visit the kids and tour the facilities.
Well, the reason is to see, right, what are the
right
conditions? So what can you tell me about the circumstances in which the kids are being held here in Chicago?
I mean, we don't have complaints about the standard of care that the children are receiving in the facilities, but it's the fact of the detention, the fact that they've been separated from their children. And so it doesn't matter how good the educational programs are, or how warm the beds are, or healthy the meals. The fact are that these kids should be with their parents. These are, in some instances, really little babies that haven't seen their parents in weeks, if not months.
And you can't ask the kid who's your mom. So how good is the documentation of matching? Even children that can talk might not know exactly the specifics to reunite them with their parent.
Right.
So how good is the paper trail on all
so
of this?
We don't even necessarily know that the child is a separated child until well into the process. We've been given, as the legal service provider for the shelters, we're not given any affirmative notification, hey, a separated kid has arrived here. We do a legal screening of every child that comes into these facilities, and usually at that point we'll figure out that the child entered with a parent, and then it's been largely on us to try and use the systems available to us, an online search function to try and find the parents.
Wait a minute. The federal government is delivering these kids to you, right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, they should know, ICE or whoever's in charge of this, if they're handing you a 3-year-old, they ought to know where they got the 3-year-old, right?
You would think.
They don't say this 3-year-old belongs to Maria somebody, and she's from there, and she's in a detention center in Texas, and you have her baby
now,
here.
Now, oftentimes, there's been no real coordination. There's not, you know, a matching number for the mom and the child so that they can be, even have basic communication.
That makes me angry. Even, you know, and I can be neutral about the policy and zero tolerance, but on our morning show, Steve Cochran and Justin Kaufman were talking about this a week ago or so, and they were marveling at how cavalier we are about the keeping of the kids with their parents, or at least knowing who belongs to who and where they are. And Justin, or one of them, said, I know where my laundry is, and I don't know how they do that. But I drop off clothes in a bag, and they go down a thing, and then I come back the week later, and they always give me the right laundry. How could we not have a system to match the kids with their parent or caretaker? These are human beings.
Right. As far as we can tell, there was little to no forethought given to the fact that at some point, there would be a hope of reunifying the kids with the parents.
What are you going to do? Raise them to adulthood? I mean, eventually you're going to give these kids to somebody, right?
Well, again, that was...
I'm not mad at you.
Right, no. No, welcome to my world. I mean, this is the really mind-blowing reality that we've been living in.
But are you saying then that at the Heartland Alliance, you are, again, the Associate Director of Legal Services for the National Immigrant Justice Center? It's located here in Chicago. You're Lisa Koop. That organization I just described is a Heartland Alliance program. The Heartland Alliance is a broader organization that deals with all sorts of immigrant issues, correct?
Immigrant issues and other human rights issues, housing, medical care, all sorts of social services.
And so then you guys are clicking around, making calls to places?
In some cases, yes.
But now, you've got a name of this baby or this child.
Usually we'll know the name, and sometimes there will be a birth certificate, sometimes not. So we'll call up the consulates, and we'll work with the Office of Refugee Resettlement officers, but oftentimes they don't know either. And so we're all trying to figure out who is this child connected to, where is the parent located. And then once we locate the parent, if they're in an adult detention facility, which they almost always are, it's next to impossible to pick up the phone and call that parent and say, hey, we know where your child is. So on the flip side of this, we represent adults, parents who we've met, and they've told us, it's been weeks, I have no idea where my child is. And they're desperate.
And then if we do match A to B, or A to A, you know, get the right person with the right adult, the best case scenario would be that they would all be living in the same detention facility.
I mean, we don't believe that that detention is necessary. In instances where the parents are seeking asylum, where the children and the families face danger, we believe that the government has a broad range of tools at their disposal that they can use to ensure that asylum seekers appear for their court hearings in the future, which
There was a program under the Obama administration that had a very good compliance record. It was canceled by the Trump administration, in part because they said it just wasn't reaching enough families. It wasn't efficient. Talk to me briefly about, all right, so suppose we reunite these families. What do we do? Let them go and hope they come back for a court-appointed date? What are we supposed to do with them?
Well, what we would like to see is an evaluation of the family, and unless there's some real determination that they're a flight risk or a danger to the community, yes, allow them to proceed with their cases from the communities where they were headed.
Okay, but some of these people are coming with the clothes on their back, right?
That's right.
Okay,
that's right.
Well, there's no purpose in letting them go. Where are they going to go?
Well,
right?
And here again, I would say our faith communities, our community groups, other organizations have stepped in and are providing support. Most times, people who are coming have some family member or friend or distant relative who supports them while they're going through the process.
In your experience, how often are these children being used as a means for these adults to get across the border?
We have not seen that. I think that's, I recognize that that's a talking point of the administration. In our experience, parents have no idea when they leave their villages in, you know, rural Honduras that, you know, bringing their child along is somehow going to be a benefit to them. What they're doing is saving their child and trying to escape very real and present dangers.
The president was asked about this yesterday, and he said, I got an idea. Don't come here illegally. You don't want to be separated from your kid? Don't come here illegally. He said that several times. What do you say to that?
I say we have a moral obligation, and it's a part of the fiber of who we are as Americans to offer refuge to people who need it. And we have a long and proud tradition of protecting refugees and granting asylum to people who need it. And I think it would be devastating for our national identity to step away from that and become a country that closes its doors to the rest of the world.
Well, how should we handle these refugees? I mean, how should we process them?
I mean, they need attorneys. When asylum seekers have attorneys, then the likelihood of them being able to prevail in their case or understand if they don't have a claim very early on so that they're not moving through the judicial system. But in immigration proceedings, there's no appointed counsel. So people don't have attorneys unless they can hire one or unless they can find a pro bono attorney to represent them.
I understand that. But, you know, you're describing people who would win. I'm wondering what would happen to the people who wouldn't prevail, that are literally crossing illegally for economic purposes or convenience purposes or purposes that just wouldn't fall under the tradition of asylum seekers. They're going to be coming too, right?
Right. I mean, I'm not advocating open borders. I think that, you know, we should have systems that recognize who's qualified for status and who is not. And part of what we do, one of the most difficult parts of my job, is evaluating the cases of people who come to us and determining who's able to proceed and who do we think doesn't have a claim and who should be considering taking voluntary departure or finding other options.
And then what do we do? This is not a baited question, but then just, as a matter of fact, would you then put them on a bus and say, now you have to go back to Honduras or Mexico or Brazil or wherever you came from? I mean, if we determine that we will not grant them residence here, then they just have to go away, right?
Sometimes people don't have a legal path to status. Now, I would argue that there are ways that our laws should be changed to afford broader availability of legal status to, you know, family members of people that have their green cards or who are citizens in the United States. But yeah, there are going to be people that don't win their cases and are going to have to make the decision to go elsewhere.
Lisa Koop's in our studio with the Immigrant Justice Center. Can you tell me a story? Maybe it's a happy one, maybe it's a sad one, but of your interaction with these kids and their families here in Chicago?
Sure. So just yesterday at our office, there was a father who was reunified with his very young daughter that he hadn't seen for weeks. And they were both delivered to a location, to the same location in Chicago. And we got to go and pick them up and see this father be reunified with his daughter. And that was just an incredible experience to see him finally have his baby back in his arms. And that's not to say that the family's not traumatized and that baby's not going to, experience, ongoing suffering from having been separated from her parents for that period of time. But
where is he from?
He is Central American, I believe, Honduran.
And so how his child was held in Chicago?
That's right.
So you were able to say, hey, your kid's in Chicago, get up to Chicago. Somehow he gets to Chicago.
Well, Immigration and Customs Enforcement brought him to Chicago. He was detained elsewhere in the country. He was identified as being in immigration detention. They were separated at the border. So the government in this instance did manage to determine where the father was and match him up with his child and bring them both to Chicago for reunification.
Wonder what the outcome of that family is going to be. Do you
right?
know?
It remains to be seen. I understand that they expect to seek asylum, and if they stay in the Chicago area, then we would certainly be looking at providing them with legal representation, and if they go elsewhere, we'll hope to connect them with another provider wherever they're going.
And that would be nice, but then some people say, and maybe we should grant them asylum, but they're going to be a burden on our society then, right? This is a family that doesn't have family here, doesn't have, I don't know if they have skills here, but they don't have a job here right now, right?
Yeah, I don't know if the numbers bear that out. I mean, I think long-term refugees and immigrant populations tend to contribute to the economic health of the communities where they live. For most asylum seekers, once they file their applications and show that they have a legitimate claim, they're eventually eligible for employment authorization. So, for example, in Elkhart County in Indiana, where we have a lot of clients, a lot of our clients are working in the RV industry, and there's a shortage of workers there. And so it's good for the community. It's good for the businesses. It's good for the individuals.
So this guy who speaks no English and doesn't have any... I'm making
limited education. That's fair.
Sure. And I'm going to make a guy up. Maybe this is this father we're talking about. Maybe not. But limited education, maybe limited skills. You know, he's not a high-tech Norwegian that the president wants. And he does not have a base here. And we're going to hope that he'll find a job in Elkhart making RVs or maybe working in a farm field around here. And he's going to find a place to live and he's going to start paying bills.
I mean, that's what we see every day.
And that happens.
We see our clients go on to become nurses and teachers and engineers.
I'm playing the devil's advocate. And do we find some of them become criminals or addicts or whatever the opposite of this rosy picture you're painting is?
I think most researchers have looked at the issue, have seen issues of criminality or rates of criminality being lower than the general population among immigrant populations. And certainly I would say asylum seekers would probably be even lower.
Why is that? Because they so don't want to go back to Brazil or Mexico or wherever they're from.
I think that's part of it. And again, I think when they're connected with attorneys and they're able to pursue their claims and put in a position to regularize their status, they move on paths towards being real contributors to their communities.
John, this is absolutely absurd, writes this texter, that these children have no tracking ability to their parents. This texter says, where do you draw the line if the majority of the world wants to come here? What would you say to that
right, text? It's not as simple as saying if you want to come here and if something really sad has happened to you, then you should come and be able to be given asylum. We've always had very rigorous laws to determine who is eligible for asylum. And so there's a steep evidentiary burden. There's a tough legal standard that people have to meet in order to be granted that protection.
Some of our listeners are asking about DNA or blood tests to make sure that the children match. Are you all overseeing that? Does that happen?
We don't. I know the government has been using DNA in some instances. We think most often that's really not necessary because there are birth certificates. The consulates have been able to determine parentage. And so it seems like something that's unnecessary in most instances, but it has been used in some cases.
John, why don't you spend this amount of time when Obama allowed this? Okay, that's a shot at me, but Did this happen under previous administrations, and were we not as exercised about it then?
Sure. The previous administration doesn't have clean hands, and I think myself and my colleagues would be the first to say that we had plenty to complain about.
So then what's the difference? What's the difference?
Well, the difference now is this, is the family separation. We've never seen it at this
volume.
Zero tolerance. We've never seen, that's right, and we've never seen the kind of false narratives that are coming out suggesting that these clients, these asylum seekers are criminals, are MS-13 gang members.
Here's how this argument gets played out on the streets. They say, John, what about the people that go to jail here in this country? They're separated from their children. So what's the difference? Why should we treat these people who are clearly breaking the law, crossing our borders, any different than we do U.S. citizens?
No, I think that's a really important question. Our immigration laws are civil laws. What the administration has done is they're charging people criminally under a federal statute that's a misdemeanor. So most people, if they're charged with a misdemeanor, might receive probation, certainly are not, you know, sent for long prison terms where they're separated from the families. And in the event that they are sent to jail, usually there are systems in place, there are other family members around, and they know where their children are, and they know who's caring for their children.
Lisa Koop is the Associate Director of Legal Services for the National Immigrant Justice Center here in Chicago. We're out of time. If people want to contribute to or find out more about you guys, what do they do?
Sure, they can go to immigrantjustice.org and find our materials there.
Immigrantjustice.org.
That's right.
Good luck to you all. Good luck to all of us. Please come on our show again.
Thank you, John. It's been my pleasure.